So verse 7, the Psalm 2 continues, I will repeat Yahweh's decree, says the king, the envisaged king. There may not be one when this is written, but this is the ideal king speaking. He said to me, you are my son, today I have begotten you. Today meaning the day of his coronation or consecration as king. Okay? The Pharaoh, they believed, the Egyptians believed he was actually the son of the gods. And in the Greek and Roman world too, they had this idea sometimes that some of their ancient legendary founders were actually born of the gods, physically, you know. No, and this is not that. This is God adopts the king as his own son on the day that he ascends the throne of Judah. That's what it's about. Interestingly, that text, which I know you know, you are my son, is at Jesus' baptism. That's the words put in there by the gospel writers. You are my son, my beloved, in whom I place my favor. At the Transfiguration, again, when they've got this beautiful scene, it's a scene, it's a painting, it's a portrait, it's not a record. But again, the words that they try to sum that up are, this is my son, listen to him. Coming back to this text here. And in Acts 13, when Paul's on his first missionary journey and he goes to Antioch in the middle of present Turkey, he says it to the Jewish community, we bring you the good news that what God promised to our ancestors, he has fulfilled for us, their children. This is the Christian message to the Jews. By raising Jesus, as also it is written in the second Psalm, you are my son, today I have begotten you. So Paul is associating that with Jesus going into heaven, okay, at the resurrection, the ascension, and on the sitting at the right hand of the Father, all these images we've got, that he is now, it's the only time Jesus ever ascended a throne, he's ascended the throne of heaven. So the day of his kingship, the day when he was made Lord and Christ and anointed one, was the day of the resurrection. He's not limiting it to that, but that's what he's talking about. Then you come into the gospel stories and you see, well, we've already done it. At the Transfiguration, the baptism, and then in Luke's gospel, to Mary, he'll be my son, he will be the Son of God, he'll be holy. So the idea goes back and back and back. The consecration of Jesus is right from the womb. So it's a different, they're struggling with the relationship between Jesus and the divinity, which of course we still are. And it's used in the letter to the Hebrews. It's a constantly, text is often used for obvious reasons. And what it's claiming is that Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is the one about whom Psalm 2 was written, as they imagined looking back. Ask of me, continues the psalm, and I will give you the nations as your inheritance and the ends of the earth for your possession. This is God saying to the king, the ideal king. Here, Zechariah, quoted earlier, after the exile, your king will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the war horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall command peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea, and from the river to the ends of the earth. Sea to sea is the Mediterranean down to the Red Sea, and from the river, that's the Euphrates, to the ends of the earth. So it's all-encompassing kingdom as they imagined it one day would come about. And when we get to the New Testament, you get the idea of the universal kingdom inaugurated by Jesus. Go to the whole earth, preach the gospel, that at last the kingdom of God, a spiritual kingdom, a kingdom of love, will go out, and it's meant to go to the whole earth, picking up all of this. And here's Paul to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15, talking about the ultimate. When all things are subjected to him, that's Jesus, then the Son himself will also be subjected to the one who put all things in subjection under him, so that God may be all in all. And our psalm goes on, verse 9, you will break them with a scepter of iron, dash them to pieces like a clay pot. Well, this is a militaristic language written, of course, pre-Jesus. And here you've got in the book of Revelations, quotes that three times, because the book of Revelations is written at a time when the Roman oppressive authority is dominating the church in Asia Minor, in this part of the world. I hope you know the book of Revelations has nothing to do with the future. It's all about the current situation at the end of the first century. And in that situation, the author is trying to inspire these people to keep their faith, even though they're being persecuted, even though dreadful things are happening to them. And, you know, there's the amphitheatre in Rome and all this stuff, lions and, the stories of the martyrs and that. Even though this is going on, he's saying, stay with your faith because you will conquer. Not meaning militarily, but you will preserve your life. There's more important things in life. You don't give in to the Roman dominant pagan demands and let your faith go. Stay with Jesus, because here we are, book of Revelations, to everyone who conquers and continues to do my works to the end, I will give authority over the nations. So what does it mean? He quotes Psalm 2, to rule them with an iron rod as when clay pots are shattered. Picking up, in other words, go and read Psalm 2. That promise is being fulfilled for you, is what it's really saying. Chapter 12, verse 5, when it talks about this woman with the stars, etc. She gave birth to a son who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, scepter of iron. And verse 19, from his mouth came a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations. He will rule them with the rod of iron. So it's not meant to be taken literally, do you get me? It's a reference back to Psalm 2 to say that he is the Messiah. Stay with him. An interesting point that has some significance for you is instead of using the word break, you will break them with a scepter of iron. The Greek has, you will shepherd them with a scepter of iron. And in fact, that may be right, because the Greek translation comes from an older, sometimes, Hebrew version of the Bible than the official one we've got, which wasn't fixed up till the end of the first century AD. So it may well be, and the difference is, was the verb used there the Hebrew ra'a, or was it ra'ah? Was it ra'a or ra'ha? Like, it's hardly any difference. And ra'a means break, ra'ah means shepherd. So, and the verb could go back to either root. So it could be that the more accurate translation of this is, you will shepherd them with a scepter of iron, going right back to David, the shepherd, and that constant image of the rule of God as a shepherd, ruling the sheep, guiding, controlling, or looking after the sheep. Now therefore, verse 10, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve Yahweh with fear. There we've got it again, the fear of the Lord. Trembling, pay him your homage, lest his anger flare up and you perish on the way. Now it's addressing the other nations. Look after Israel. Be careful what you do to it. Be wise, O rulers of the earth. You know, serve Yahweh, and the fear of God and the anger of God, which I've talked about already. And here's a text from the Book of Wisdom, which comments on that a bit, perhaps. Listen, therefore, O kings, and understand. Learn, O judges of the ends of the earth. Your dominion was given you from Yahweh, and your sovereignty from the Most High. He will scrutinize what you're doing and look into your plans. To you, then, O monarchs, my words are directed, so that you may learn wisdom and not transgress. And I conclude with a final eschatological statement from Paul to the Corinthians about the kingdom of God, the reign of God, a constant image throughout the New Testament, and Jesus as the one who brings about the reign of love. That's the only reign God has. The reign of love in the world, because God is love. It's a very purified look at all the scriptures that the New Testament gives us, if only we listened to it and lived it. And here we come. Then comes the end, says Paul, when Christ hands over the kingdom to God the Father, after he has destroyed every ruler and every authority and power. For he must reign, that's Christ, until he has put all his enemies under his feet, till love has triumphed. The last enemy to be destroyed, says Paul, is death. For God has put all things into subjection under his feet. When all things are subjected to him, then the Son himself will also be subjected to the one who put all things into subjection under him, so that God may be all in all. And the text concludes, happy are all who take refuge in him. That's the final verse of Psalm 2. Happy, and happy takes us right back to Psalm 1. Which these two are meant, in other words, behind all this about the king is the understanding that it's all on the proviso that he lives according to chapter 1, Psalm 1. That if he must live according to meditate on the law and do God's will. It's not the king is automatically going to succeed. So it's all dependent on the will of God.